We look at everything that comes to the market in multifamily.
Welcome to CREPN Radio for influential commercial real estate professionals who work with investors, buyers, and sellers of commercial real estate coast to coast. Whether you're an investor, broker, lender, property manager, attorney, or accountant, we're here to learn from the experts.
Welcome to Commercial Real Estate Pro Network CREPN Radio. This is episode number 59. Weekly, we share interviews with real estate experts passing on their experience and knowledge to our listeners. Thanks for joining us this week. My name is Jade Aaron Gross. We're so glad you're here. In just a minute, we're going to speak with Paul Worster of Worster Investments in Kansas City. Paul shares his and his brother's journey from building spec homes in Oregon to syndicating and managing over 3,000 multifamily units in Kansas City. He describes their fundamental philosophies, how they stay focused, and the importance of mastering the Kansas City multifamily market. He describes the importance of being well-connected in the market with both brokers and apartment owners, how the deal size has grown from duplexes to deals now that start at a minimum of $5 million. We talk about raising capital and projects they're currently investing in. But before we do, I've got some big news. Now you can go to commercialrealestateproNetwork.com and listen to our podcast. We now have all of our shows listed there, and there's a podcast link in the navigation bar, and it makes a lot more sense than it used to. But just want to let you know about that. And you can also subscribe to the show from there. There's a subscribe button if you click the podcast. But if you're in your app, you're in your phone, and you are on iTunes or on Stitcher, I don't want to let you forget that you can go to the search bar there and type in Commercial Real Estate Pro Network. Commercial Real Estate Pro Network. And when you see our logo, it's the headphones with CREPN between the ears. Go ahead and click subscribe, and this will give you access to all of our episodes and notify you when there's a new one. And we've got some great guests coming up, so check it out. For those of you who don't know me, I'm a real estate investor and a commercial property insurance broker. I've been an insurance broker for 25 plus years, and my primary clients are real estate professionals dealing in multifamily, retail, warehouse, office, and development. Also, I'm a real estate investor and have been for 20 years. Based on this, I'm always looking for more information about real estate so I can better support my clients and for information that I can use in my own investing. And that's how Commercial Real Estate Pro Network and CREPN Radio came about. The easiest way to reach me is you can go to the contact button there at commercialrealestateproNetwork.com and go ahead and click the contact button and either shoot me an email or go ahead and you can, there's my phone number on there. You can reach out to me there as well. I want to remind you too, insurance is a part of any real estate transaction. And if you find yourself with a question or a problem, you need to talk through it or you want to get a second opinion, give me a call, shoot me an email, and I'll do everything I can to help you. A couple of people that have reached out to me here recently. I had a gentleman that's working on buying an office building in South Carolina. Also got an apartment property in Iowa, and then also a large apartment complex in Dallas, Texas. So we've got the ability, and we can help you in all those places. I want to remind you, too, if you're on LinkedIn, go ahead and check out our group, Commercial Real Estate Pro Network. It's a great place to network with commercial real estate professionals. And with that, let's get on to the show. On the line today, I'm pleased to have Paul Worster. Paul is one of the Worster brothers involved in Worster Investments. Paul, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Darren.
Paul and I and his brother Joel met almost 2 years ago at a funding event in I think it was November 14 up in Seattle, and I've stayed in touch with Joel and Paul and kind of watched their progress and was excited to get a chance to have them on the program here. And before we get into that, Paul, if you could share with the listeners a little bit about you and your background and what Worster Investments is about.
Sure. We grew up in Eugene, Oregon, on the campus, basically, of the University of Oregon there. And as we were finishing up college, myself and my two brothers, we were in college or finishing up college, and we were kind of talking about what we were going to do with our with ourselves. And we'd worked with a home builder and built four homes in the summers part time. And the first three of them, this was 03, 04, 05, sold right away, and we made profits. And on more than one occasion, remarked, you know, isn't this real estate thing awfully easy? You know, why doesn't everybody do this? And then the fourth home, the last one we did, was 06, and then it became 07, and it sat on the market for a year, and we're just hemorrhaging money at this vacant, you know, $250,000 home. And it really made an impact on us. And then about that time, we had read Rich Dad Poor Dad, and that was a pretty influential book. And so we mainly from those two events, we decided that we wanted to be in a business that was, if we did it right, would produce regular, reliable cash flow. And so that was sort of the origins of us getting into the multifamily industry. We jumped in full time with a $200,000 investment from our father. It was his life savings, basically. Put a second mortgage on his house, and we bought 16 units in Salem, Oregon. And then the gentleman that we bought them from moved to Kansas City, and we basically stayed in touch with him, went out and visited him, and then, you know, 90 days later, we had left Oregon to Kansas City. We didn't know anybody there. We just thought that the philosophy of earning cash flow, you know, putting some money down on a piece of real estate and earning a return on that was easier to do in the Kansas City market than in the Oregon market. And so we moved out here and began buying very small properties, 2 and 4 unit properties for, you know, $100,000. And then, uncle invested and father-in-law invested and close family and friends, $50,000, $100,000 there. And we did all our own property management. That started because we couldn't find a good property manager, so we just started doing it ourselves. Didn't originally have a goal of doing that. But and then 2008 became 2009, and we had about 40 properties at that time that we bought, all, you know, 2 to 8 unit properties, and there was a handful of single family homes. And then in 2009, we bought our first larger property, a 60 unit property, and then a 96 unit property. And that was a big change because we realized for ourselves that it was far better to own a whole bunch of units in one location. You know, you could have professional on-site management. You didn't have to deal with driving all over town and a bunch of different roofs. And we could have some economies of scale when we bought paint and supplies, et cetera. And so from that point on, we've been buying and operating just kind of organically growing our business here in Kansas City. So today we have about 3,000 units that we own a piece of with about 75 investors. We have about 120 employees that do mainly property management, construction, and then investments. We have a few employees that work with Joel and I on the investments side. And then in the last year, we've kind of evolved again, and we have taken on three new developments. We are doing a ground up development, a $45 million ground up development. We are doing a direct purchase from a builder, so that's slightly different. Where the builder's building 172 townhomes, and we are buying them as they're built and get a certificate of occupancy. We are closing on those. That's a slightly different thing. And then we just closed actually a few weeks ago on a downtown redevelopment, so a vacant building that we are redeveloping. So just kind of organically growing and developing with a very, very strong focus in the multifamily industry in Kansas City. That's really all we know and all we focus on.
Well, that's a lot to digest there, you guys. It's kind of funny, our paths kind of flip-flopped. I came from Kansas City out to Oregon, and you, Oregon, back to Kansas City. I wanted to just kind of go back here and build on this a little bit. So when you guys first started out, you mentioned your father. Was he lending you money, or was he a partner with you? And then your other investors and family members, did you go partners, or was it a loan that you were getting from these in the beginning?
Yeah, with our father, my two brothers and I and our father just went into business equally. We each owned a quarter of the business. My two brothers, Jesse's not active in the business. He's Pass's partner in Worcester Investments, but not active in the day-to-day. Joel and I are doing that now. But my father, he was never active in the business. He was a pastor of a small church. Mom was a school teacher, and so he invested $200,000 and became a partner with us. Did not really ever have a day-to-day involvement. He was just kind of a big fan of us and very, very encouraging and largely responsible in a lot of ways for us getting started. The next kind of people that we partnered with were both. It was some loans where we would just borrow money, either just unsecured, signed by our name. Some was secured by a piece of real estate, but the vast majority, especially as we've grown, has been equity money. I mean, the typical model in the industry, it's known as syndication. You could call it a joint venture, but we basically are the active participants in the investment. We find the investment, we put it together, we manage it, we perform the construction, and we handle all of the day-to-day responsibilities. And the part of the investor typically in our typical model, and I'll touch on this at some point, we are opening up a fund probably in 2017, but we find a deal, we bring it to our investors, and they decide, you know, either yes or no, that they want to participate, and they come in and they'll put in equity, and typically we'll put down 20 to 30% And then the rest will be a loan. And so that's how we will acquire property.
Got it. And we talked a little before we started the recording here, but just when you, the model, when you're doing the syndication and you go find the deal, and then have to scramble to find the money, when you find a property, I guess is what I wanted to start with. When you find a property, are there specific things that you look for that you can improve on? Do you have kind of a laundry list of items that you know, or is each property slightly different? Can you give us an example or two of things that you look for when you do find a property?
Yeah, I think for us, one of our five core values is mastery and focus. And I think that's reflected in the very beginning when we started. And so just to kind of take a step back, it can be, and we run into this and for myself at times, it can be overwhelming to try and process, you know, investment opportunities. What is investing? How do you define that? You know, what are the criteria? And so for us, we want to be very focused, and we want to be the best in the world at something. That's one of our core values. And so, kind of taking a step back. So there's essentially four main asset types that we can choose to invest in. You know, there's commodities, there's paper assets like stocks, bonds, mutual funds, there's real estate, and then there's a business. And so those are kind of the four categories. And so we have intentionally, you know, left out one half of those. So we don't have anything in stocks. We don't have anything in paper assets. We don't have anything in commodities. So we focus on we have a business, and we are in, of course, the real estate industry. So that right there, it simplifies our world, because we are only operating in a very limited area, and so we feel we can be good at that. Then furthermore, when you go into real estate, there's a whole bunch of different things people can do in real estate. And so we have very intentionally said we are going to be purposely ignorant in a lot of those. We come across a piece of commercial real estate, a retail place or an industrial building or an office building, and we have friends in the industry, and we'll just pass those on to them. But we don't even begin to try and look at those and understand those, because our feeling is for every time we say yes to that, we're saying no to some piece of multifamily property that we could be reviewing. And that's where we really thrive. And so we focus only on multifamily industry. So just before I even answer and get into kind of how we evaluate multifamily, we feel pretty significant. Most of the people that we run into are not that way. I mean, most people say, yeah, I'll look at anything. And then I should say another narrowing component factor that is, we only work in Kansas City. You know, it's a metro of 2 to 2.5 million people, 28th largest metropolitan in the country. You know, plenty of real estate for us to do here. We can be here for many years and never have to leave this area. And so by just limiting ourselves to that, the vast majority of our competitors are not so focused. They're looking in other cities. They're looking at a whole bunch of types of real estate. And so that, to answer your question, that I think is probably the most important criteria right there, is saying, what can we really be great at, and what are we going to be purposely ignorant on the rest. Now to get more detailed or specific on your question. So we look at everything that comes to the market in multifamily of any size. And we've evolved, you know, years ago, of course, we'd look at a duplex or a fourplex in very specific areas of Kansas City. And by the way, that's another component. We don't just buy anywhere in Kansas City. We have very specific submarkets within Kansas City that we will buy, and others that we won't. But today we will look at anything of size. So, you know, maybe $5 million and, you know, 50 units or greater with no maximum. We will look at and evaluate, and I have a director of acquisitions that will look at those. We can underwrite a property in typically about 45 to 90 minutes, depending on its size, and we'll get it. There's really three pieces of information that we need to underwrite it using our Excel-based underwriting template. We need a rent roll. We need an operating statement, like a 12-month trailing 12 operating statement, which shows all the income and expenses, how the property's doing. And then we need some basic, you know, information on the property. Typically would be found in like a realtor's property package. But if it's not listed, we just have to get it ourselves. So it'd be like, how many units, what's the unit mix, you know, who pays what utilities, and just various kind of basic facts of the property, when it was built, et cetera. So that is kind of our philosophy, as we look at everything. Now we have changed over the years. So what I would buy today is not necessarily what I would buy 2 and 4 years ago, because our capacity has grown. So we would buy a million or a $2 or $3 million deal 5 years ago, and that would be a fairly big deal. And today, you know, a $5 million deal is about the smallest that we would look at. So that's kind of evolved a little bit. But in general, we're looking for something that, and I follow Warren Buffett and his writings and what people have written about him, what he says. And so we're looking to buy something at a discount to its intrinsic value. Right, so something that this piece of real estate, this asset that hopefully is going to produce regular, reliable cash flow, there's something unique about it that maybe it's mispriced, maybe the management is not going correctly, and so maybe we can buy it at a 7 cap rate. Cap rate, we define that as just the cash rate or the unlevered return. It's just without a note on it. And so maybe it's a 7% return, but we see a direct line of sight that if we do X, Y, and Z, we reasonably believe we can turn it into an 8 cap, you know, and so then our return, you know, significantly increases. We look at, you know, well over 100 deals a year and a lot more than that we don't, that never really get underwritten heavily. We will, you know, the price will just know pretty much right away it's not going to work or something, or maybe it's too small, but, and we most of them, the vast majority of them just do not work. And so we might buy 5 to 10 properties a year. That's kind of our model. And so we can afford to be really, really, picky. And I think for us, here's an example. We bought about 1,300 units the first half of last year, and since then we've not bought anything. We've not acquired any existing properties of size. We're doing our developments that I mentioned, but we have not been able to find multifamily properties in the climate today that makes sense for us. So that was kind of a long-winded answer to your question.
But it is full of valuable information based on the way you guys operate. Definitely you've got some, you know, your focus and who you look to. I mean, Warren Buffett's no dummy. I mean, you know, value-oriented investing, I think that's something that it's easy to get lost, especially in the frenzy of the marketplace when, you know, everybody's talking about real estate. I wanted to ask you, though, when you mentioned the number of deals that you come across, you know, you said over 100 deals a year. On those deals, when you see the offer price, do you provide any indication that, well, if we'd be interested at this price, or do you just not even go there?
Well, for us, and I would think for most people, it's important to have relationships with the owners and the people that move the product, you know, brokers mainly,
right?
And could be property managers, someone who has a lead on a deal. But for us, it's a relationship business. I think that's, again, we only work in Kansas City. I think that gives us an advantage. We basically know everyone who's in the apartment market. I mean, we have a mailing list. We know all the property, the apartment owners in town. I've met a lot of them, but we've certainly contacted them by phone and by mail, met multiple times. We host events where we invite them to little, you know, networking events or little just get hors d'oeuvres and drinks and just kind of say hello. And so for us, the answer is always yes. I mean, we always try and offer. Now, it may be a one sentence email. If we're at like 60 a door and they're saying we really need to be at 90 a door, I'm not going to probably draft a full, you know, formal offer because that may waste their time. They've got to present it to the owner or they've got to review it. And if we've talked and I'm confident that that's kind of where they're going to be, we might send an email, but then we want to follow up. So if it hasn't sold in a few months, then we can follow up and reengage, and maybe it comes down. But at the onset, we want to always be, you know, interacting and you know, remind people that we're active and that we're a major buyer. And just treating people with respect, you know, that goes a long way. When someone asks you for what they think of a deal, you know, just we try and get back with them and just say, here's where we'd be at and here's why, and call us if you have questions, and people, you know, people appreciate that.
No, I think your mention there of the follow-up, that's a huge thing, because how many times does a deal or an opportunity come along, or it's presented in one way, the market changes, or something changes with that seller. They need to get out of it faster than they can't wait for that price that they wanted. Like I said, maintain those relationships. I wanted to ask you a little bit more about the relationships and the mailing list. You mentioned you're obviously well connected with all the brokers. You've made contact with many of the owners. I'm curious, do you find quite a few opportunities come direct from other owners?
Yeah, about the last figure I remember, we tallied it up. About a third of what we buy is off market, so it's not really listed. And it might be directly from a buyer. It might be a broker just kind of is aware of it and calls us, you know, before he ever takes it to market. That's how I would kind of define off market. But it's more difficult in this environment because the pricing that people will pay, and a lot of times it's out of area, East Coast and West Coast, and then international investors are looking at Kansas City heavily, not like I've really ever seen before. And but yes, there's a lot we consider it of great value to be close with other owners and people who know about property, and it's important for us to always remember that, you know, real estate is a people business. You know, that there's always people that are making decisions and managing it. It's a real piece of real estate that involves, you know, in our business, it's families, multiple families that are staying somewhere. There, it's always possible where there's going to be problems. There's financial problem from the owner. There's a management problem. All sorts of things can go wrong, and even in today's environment where the pricing is oftentimes higher than the market will pay, higher than what we will, there's still opportunities because people are unpredictable and people make mistakes.
Yep, patience. That's definitely a virtue. Let me ask you, going back just a little bit about Kansas City as a marketplace. I was looking on your website and just being familiar with Kansas City, it looks like you guys have kind of, you're pushing out in some of the surrounding areas. How big of a radius of operation, miles wise, are you guys? Give us some boundaries of where you're operating.
Well, there's really not much outside of an hour of Kansas City. I mean, the furthest submarkets, I mean, if you go to St. Louis, that's, you know, 3.5, 4 hours. You know, Columbia's, you know, more than a couple hours. And so to answer your question, we'll go to Lawrence, Kansas. We'll go to St. Joseph, Missouri. We'll go to Topeka, Kansas. But about 1 hour from, you know, the heart of Kansas City is where we'll go. And there's not really much outside of that. I mean, you have to go to 2 and 3 hours really to get to cities of size. You can go to Omaha and Springfield, Missouri, and St. Louis, but those are all, you know, 2 to 4 hours at least to get to those bigger cities. So about 1 hour.
Got it. And you mentioned that your price point, or not your price point, but your deal size that you're working on now, from 1 million before to now, north of 5 million. What can you describe a little bit about what changed? Was it that you guys got really good at the million and realized you were good enough to do the larger, or what was it that, changed for you guys?
You know, I think it's probably the natural progression of a lot of people like us, and it's probably no different than anything else. So, and I'll just give a very basic example. When we first started, when we bought a duplex for, you know, $50,000, you know, that was a great place to learn. It was, you know, hard to lose everything because the rents are such that you should be able to at least pay your debt and your expenses and not lose everything. And, we learned at that level, and I think that's wise for anyone investing is to start where you can't lose everything, and at some point you're going to have to make decisions that are dealing with more zeros as a at risk, or that you're investing. But For us, it was starting really, really small. At some point, you go through all of the processes and you go, okay, we got to raise money. We got to go through the closing process. There's just all these steps that occur, and it becomes, well, this probably isn't worth it for my time. So it's probably a time thing more than anything. It's probably not worth my time, the value of my time and the opportunity cost. I'd say that's a big one, to pursue a deal at $50,000 anymore. So I'm going to look at, $100,000 deals. Now, there's always the exception. I mean, if we found a $1 million deal that was just an absolute home run, then we're going to buy it. I'm giving basic guidelines. But for the most part, we have to really, really, really be impressed, and it has to be persuasive, strongly persuasive for us to buy something that would be, about under $5 million. Because we have someone who handles closing. We have someone who's in charge of investor relations, and our operations team, has to take over and look at this property, and we've got to manage it. It's a lot harder to manage. People don't think this way, but it's a lot harder to manage a 16 unit property than a 100 unit property. And so, those are some of the reasons, I think.
No, it makes complete sense. Before we go into more of the syndication, I wanted to ask you real quick about the management. You mentioned that in the beginning you didn't find anything that you liked, so you went ahead and managed your own. Do you feel like that gives you an advantage over others, knowing that you guys are, it's your people on the ground, your people interacting with the tenants, your people, managing the properties?
I think it can. I don't think it automatically does. I think there's people that manage their own stuff and aren't very good at it, and there's people that don't manage their stuff and can be very good at managing the manager. So I don't think there's a right or a wrong for us. We didn't intend to manage our properties. That was not like part of our grand plan. We tried out property management companies and had unanimously horrible experiences doing so. One example was we had a duplex that we brought to a property management company, and they didn't show any of the units for 7 weeks. I mean, I'm not saying they didn't lease any of the units. I'm saying they didn't even show the units for 7 weeks. And so and they were like, one of the bigger names in our market that we're managing. So that was probably an extreme example, and I'm sure they made mistakes, that somehow there was a mistake made. But we just said, okay, well, I guess we got to manage our own property. And looking back, it was really wonderful that happened, because, I've processed a whole bunch of evictions. I've probably evicted, 50 or 100 people. And, we've collected rent. When we first started out, we collected cash, and we visit people all throughout the days and collect rent. And if they weren't home, we'd come back multiple times. And if they were avoiding us, we'd have to figure out how to set up a payment plan. And then if we had to evict them, do that. And we had to think about, approve people, what's the methodologies, how do we run a background check and all that. And so we kind of really did learn the business at the very, very basic levels. And so when someone says, well, we can't lease, this fast, or well, we're just going to have this many evictions, that's just the way it's going to be. And we can say, well, that's not what I found, or here's what I've tried. And it's a different posture when you've lived in that business, and you can kind of see what's what. And so, for us, it's now become, who we are. We have a property management company that we're becoming as good as anybody. I don't think we're there yet, but we're certainly trying and improving, and then construction side of things as well. And I think in the end, the process that by which we look at how the investments come together is we have to find a really good deal. All right. We have to find something of value that is a good deal. And if we can't do that, then we just don't move forward. Once we find it, we've got to find reliable, philosophically minded people with excess cash, people that have money that is not being used in a way that they're happy with it. Otherwise they wouldn't invest with you. You know, they're open to investing with you with the right deal. And then once you close that, you've got to be able to look the investor in the eye and say, okay, we'll handle it. Whatever happens, whether I can plan for it or, there's a lot of things where you just can't plan for it. And, they're just going to be like, oh, wow, that was interesting. We've got to pivot. How do we handle this mess or something? And so once you have their money, we treat it like it's our money and we will, we will do whatever it takes. That's another one of our core values, is do whatever it takes. For us, it's really important. And we can, when there's a problem at a property, we can go directly to the person involved in that and get an answer right away. Whereas if we did have third party management, we would be calling someone who'd be calling someone who'd be calling someone. And there is a level of removed where you're removed. And when problems start happening, and we've been developing key KPIs, I'm blanking on the answer.
Yeah, KPI, that was a key points.
Key performance indicators.
Yeah, there you go.
Key performance indicators. Thank you. Anyways, leading indicators that would tell us what's coming around the bend. So we know if occupancy is 90% and we have too many make readies that have not been turned, then guess what? That occupancy is going to go down, not up. Right. It's just a basic thing. I mean, you have to have ready units to lease. And so we've developed a dashboard with about 15 of these metrics that we have a red, yellow, green, and a blue that go from, blue is outstanding, wonderful, perfect. Green is overperforming or doing well. Yellow is okay. Watch out. There's concern here. We need to be aware. And red is like emergency, like, blaring red lights, emergency. And they're not on the past, right? Because if you're just looking at the past, you can't change the past. But they're all of these, or I think nearly all of them, I think they're all leading indicators. So we can affect the future. So all of these, you can be like, well, I'm in red here, so this is going to affect the NOI, the financial performance in 30, 60, 90, 120 days, but it's not there yet. And so it's a way for us to align with the team and say, this is what we care about. This is how we can successfully operate the property, and we can all be on the same page, because we were finding for years, we kind of say, well, we need to perform better here. And it's like, well, what do I need to do to perform better? And there's a lot of subjectivity in that. Well, I mean, what do you do? What are the activities you do to perform better? And there's some very specific ones that matter a lot more than other ones, like having a unit ready to lease when someone comes to lease. It seems like completely basic. Like, well, of course, I mean, you got to do that. Well, when you're running a site, and you've got about 101 things going on, and you've got marketing, and you've got this eviction over here, and you've got, someone's painting a unit, and you get lost in that, and you don't always see the most important things as they are. And so you might just have a unit sit for a week or two or three, and no one's turned it, and you're losing traffic because you can't show that unit. So things like that are are really, really important. We track how our collections are doing by each day of the month and compare it to last month. So, we've improved dramatically on that. I think we set a record for our company recently. We had, I think it was under 2% delinquency, which is really, really good for our, I mean, we have C and B and A properties, and for our business, that's very good. And so I think it was, you know, under 2%, and we were very, very proud of the team for that.
Oh, that's outstanding. That's great. Well, I'm impressed in just how you guys have taken a look at each process and really analyzed it to where you understand, you know, what are the steps that are required. And then did you guys write your own software, or is this a package software that you bought that helps you with the dashboard, or?
We just created that ourselves. I mean, it's just an Excel-based, we have it on Google Sheets, you know, live. Mm-hmm. The property management software that we use is Yardi, which is one of the two. OneSite and Yardi are kind of the two legacy leaders in that. But we just work off a basic Excel for the other things.
Got it. Okay. Love all the management input there. And just one more question. Do you guys manage for anybody else or just your own properties?
We never have. We've managed a few houses or something for an investor here and there, but no, the answer is no. We've never even tried. We've been asked to many times, of construction and property management, and we just don't feel that that's in the best interest of our values, our philosophy, our company, and our investors. And so maybe someday we will. I mean, if we don't buy anything for a year or two, then sure, we'll look at that if we feel that we're doing a great job. But we've been growing very fast year over year. And so we're having enough of a challenge just keeping up with our growth at this time. At some point we probably will, though.
Sure. Well, like you said, mastery and focus. I mean, get it right. excuse me. Let's talk about syndication here a little bit. You mentioned how you find a deal and kind of a little bit about what syndication is. And I think what I wanted to get into a little bit more is the individuals that you work with. We talked a little bit before the call started just about the process. And can you speak a little bit to you know, some of the people that are working with you and kind of the timelines and, you know, from where they come and how long it, you know, might take somebody to warm up to and decide, okay, I want to do this.
Well, we've worked with about 75, 80 investors. They need to be accredited, which you can look up the definition of that. But they typically have to be really comfortable with real estate. I mean, if someone has never invested in real estate and they have, you know, a $5 million net worth and all their money's in, you know, their house and their business and stocks, you know, and they've never been in real estate. We're you know, that's not an easy decision to say, well, I'm going to invest $500,000 in your next deal. There's a lot of comfort and experience and just understanding of how real estate works that has to be, the learning curve has to be there. And so the vast majority of our investors have been in real estate in some component, you know, in the industry, a real estate agent, a smaller time investor. Maybe they've been investing in smaller houses for a while or, before they invest with us in an apartment syndication where they're going to do it passively. So, what I tell people is about the only reason I can think of why disadvantage, like the only reason you wouldn't invest in real estate in my opinion, is the slowness of it and the illiquidity of it. So real estate is extremely illiquid when you look at, you know, compared to like a publicly traded stock. You can be in one day and out the next moment. and move to something else. And it's, you know, it's considered a cash equivalent. You know, you can liquidate an account with your brokerage at a mutual fund or a stock in a S&P 500 or something and reinvest that in something else. In real estate, direct investing in real estate, you can't do that. Now you can invest in a REIT. There's disadvantages and advantages to that. Directly in real estate, like with us, where you're really an inside investor is the way I look at it. I mean, you're looking at something very, very specific in a market that you can learn and touch and feel, and in a REIT, you're not going to get that. So, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, and thank you for kind of describing that a little bit, but when you guys, you mentioned you find a property, you reach out to your potential investors. What kind of a time frame is it taking for you to generate the needed capital to invest in a property?
Well, that is evolved over the years. So, in 2007, 2008, we didn't even know what a syndication was. We didn't, on a $50,000 purchase or a $100,000 purchase, we certainly didn't spend, $10,000 or $15,000 on an SEC attorney to draft a private placement memorandum and put together everything to do a closing that way. I mean, we put together a simple LLC and we got the money from an investor. And it's ranged though. I mean, the way we've always worked, I think, is we have to close quickly. I mean, and that I think is life. You know, if there's a great deal out there, if there's something that's truly a good deal, why would it be available for 3 months? You know, they just typically aren't. I mean, someone else is going to buy that if it's a great deal. And so we've kind of always, had to close in 30 to 60 days, maybe 90 days, but making a commitment or to wire money within 30 days is you need to have, be ready to wire the money in about 30 days is typically what we tell people. And sometimes it's been a lot less than that. Sometimes it's been a couple weeks or something. And that, wow. Those are the really tight ones. But, so you asked about timing. Yeah. Timing, it's been that, and then the dollar amounts have just grown. And so, I mean, the last deals we've done, we've raised, all in the round, around the $5 million range for the deals in equity. And, we've been very fortunate that those have fully subscribed in, about a couple of weeks. And, that's been, we're very blessed. We have a investor group who is truly, I think, unique. They have tremendous trust in us, and they I think the last stat that we looked at, it was something around 75% had invested in multiple deals with us. So, I mean, our investors are not typically investing once, and we actually prefer not to work with someone like this, that they're going to invest in a deal and that's it. I mean, we prefer to work with someone where there's at least the mutual interest in investing in a whole bunch of things together for a long, long time. And that makes our job easier, and it makes the investors, job easier. I mean, as an investor, you can't interview 1,000 syndicators. You can't look at, 100 investments a month like we do. And so I would advise an investor to interview a lot of people, but then narrow it down to a handful of people that you want to invest with and just really get to know them really well. And that'll be a better way than just trying to look at, because the sponsor who's behind that investment is as important, if not more important, than the investment itself. I'll tell a story. I was I was meeting with a gentleman, actually a group that they essentially were behind the growth of Cassidy Turley. Have you heard of the brokerage and real estate service company, Cassidy Turley?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're a national, they sold a few years ago, I believe, but I was introduced and met with three of the, you know, the highest level execs that essentially grew that company. Really, really neat people. And they've got a startup in St. Louis called Selequity. It's like a crowdfunding portal, and met with them. Really, really great people. And something stuck with me that I thought was very interesting. Here's a guy who has lived and breathed commercial real estate for many, many years. I mean, he grew their offices from like 5 to 50. And I mean, they were a huge company, very, very respected, and seen everything that there is to see in investment commercial real estate. And he said this, I thought this was profound. He said, I will look at a deal, and it does not really matter what the numbers or the pictures or the words really say in that deal. Now, it can say 19% return. It can say 4% return. It can say, what really matters to me is, do I know the person behind it, or do I know the person that's recommending them behind it? And I thought, isn't that interesting? Because anyone can put a projected return together and say, well, mine's going to beat yours. And, you know, but what's going to really happen when the problems happen, when the surprises happen? What's going to happen 2 years later when, you know, you have a problem with your taxes, and you need a question answered right away, and you need to speak to one of us or something. What's going to happen when the market turns and the multifamily market isn't doing so well, and you need your group to be better than everyone else, not just kind of average? And so anyways, all that, and then integrity and honesty and all those things just apply. And I think that's probably true in anything, is any business opportunity, is the people behind it. And I think that's been true of our company. The way we've tried to grow is we're not so much interested in people that say they're going to be good or have a great resume. That matters. But what really matters is what they're going to do when you're not looking, and are they going to be ethical? Are they going to have a passion for doing the right thing and excellence and being the best in the world at something, being great, truly great intrinsically, not because someone wants you to, your boss wants you to, not because, you know, you need the paycheck, but because you just do. That's just who you are. And that's the kind of people we try and align ourselves with.
No, that's, those are great philosophies and a great practice. I mean, if you're able to build a business on that sound foundation, you can sleep pretty easy at night. And especially knowing, you know, like I said, knowing what the people are going to do and trusting them. That's a pretty tough angle to beat. Let me ask you just a little bit more on you know, obviously you talked there about integrity and stuff, but I'm curious. Return, when you're working with your investors, what are you guys, your strategy, how long are you staying in an investment? Are you long term, or is it a 5 to 7 years? What's your plan?
Well, our philosophy is that it goes back to what is an investment. And so to us, you know, the definition of Benjamin Graham's investment definition, which was Warren Buffett's mentor, was, and I'm paraphrasing, was something to the effect of investing is, you know, first of all, not losing money, you know, keeping the principal, you know, and then is making a reasonable return. And then before that, it's deep analysis. It's like, you know, you do a lot of actual study, you know, before you invest, and then your first goal is don't lose money, and then your second goal is let's make a reasonable return. And I think that last one is important, is you don't need to make, you know, a home run every time. You don't need to be thinking, well, I've got to make, you know, 50% return, because you get burned on stuff when you're always after the supernatural return. And so what we tell people is that true deals are just, they're just rare, right? There's a market out there. There's a lot of people out there like us looking for real estate deals, and the market wouldn't work if there were just deals all over the place. I mean, they wouldn't be deals.
Right.
And so we have a great deep respect for when we find a deal. And when we find a great, great deal, we would rather hold that forever. Now that's hyperbole. It doesn't necessarily mean forever, but philosophically we'd rather hold it, you know, for a long, long time and spend all of our energy in finding the next one. Because people don't, there's a lot of people out there that have the, and there's no right or wrong. And someone will say, well, you're getting a low return on your equity. Well, true. That's fine. If we have a bunch of equity in a property that we don't, you know, sell and move to the next one, that's fine. But I don't mind that. I think that that's a safety mechanism when you pay down a loan over time. And there is a lot of energy and time and cost that go into selling a property and moving it to another property. I think that is so underestimated in what that actually costs to do that.
The cost of the transaction. It is amazing what it adds up to.
Yeah, and then there's risk. So I'm assuming a 1031 exchange. So I'm assuming you defer taxes and you move from one. There's a whole bunch of risk in there. I mean, the IRS is, you know, not lenient. You have 45 days to identify something, and you have 180 days to close on something. Well, to me, that's pretty limiting in what we don't ever buy with those kinds of, like, well, we've got to buy something in 45, identify something in 45 days. And yes, I know you can identify something before you have it lined up. And there's ways to be wise with that and be safe with that. But, I would just keep the thing forever. Now, let me answer what we've actually done. So we have about 3,000 units and we've only sold two properties, to my knowledge, of size, and we sold them both this year. And I'll just tell you, this is the reason I would recommend selling. Okay, if something has changed in the belief of the future prospects of that investment, right? That's what determines the future, not what the past is. So you might be saying, well, you've got a $5 million investment in, sorry, that's my dog in the background. She's riled up about something. You might have a $5 million investment and, you know, you only have $2.5 million into it. So you're sitting on $2.5 million of equity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, we would rather find the next deal. You know, that's what we'd do, and we'd let that sit there. Now, if something changed, right, and this happened, so I'll give an example. We have a property we bought in 2012, and we paid like $3.1 million for it. And this is probably our best ever investment from, you know, including, well, it's only one of two properties we sold, so it had a sale. It's right up there in our top investments. We bought it for $3.1 million. We put a few hundred thousand into it. It cash flowed phenomenally from almost immediately when we bought it. It was a distressed kind of a sale, and an out of town owner, and the manager was stealing money and just kind of a mess. And it produced, you know, cash on cash returns. You know, I think they were in the over 15%, maybe in the 20% total for the property. Just ongoing operational returns, no sale, nothing like that. Just a really, really strong deal. And then we sold about 90 days ago or so for, let me think here. Well, it was like $8.8 million.
Wow.
So it was just an amazing, you know, just an amazing, you know, deal. And our investors, you know, I think they ended up making something like 250% return, something like that. And it was just an outstanding deal. Everyone did well. Now, why did we sell that, though? Here's why we sold it, okay? The property was in Leavenworth, Kansas. Leavenworth, Kansas is a submarket of Kansas City. There's a huge military presence there. There's a famous military prison there. Some of the most dangerous, prisoners have come through there, the Leavenworth system, and it's called the military, brain of the brain of the military, and just a heavy military influence. Okay, it drives the economy of that local submarket. Now, we hear a couple of years ago that they're as many people know, they're making military cuts. I mean, I don't quote me on this, but I think they're decreasing the army from 250,000 or 240,000 down to 200, something like that. The actual active people, and so gosh, that's maybe going to affect us. And they announced that there was going to be big cuts at the military base there, and it ended up not being as bad, but the signs were there. I mean, this has been happening for a couple of years, and we're seeing this, and the market got a little soft. I mean, there seemed to be the people around there were not, the occupancy dropped a little. And so our belief in the future of that piece of property changed. Not that we could sell out and get a big sale, but that was really the reason why.
And you said you bought that in, was it 03 or what was it?
We bought that in 2012.
Oh, 2012. Okay.
Yeah.
No, that's huge.
Yeah.
That's huge. Let's touch briefly, and I want to respect your time here. You talked a little bit about you guys are developing a fund.
And, yeah, we've been developing, looking at a fund for a while. Basically we've always done one at a time deals, and a fund is a discretionary fund, meaning someone invests and they don't know what we're going to buy. And now they can look at what we've bought, but they don't know what we're going to buy next. And so it's just a different animal. It's a different way to invest. And so we are going to offer both. So probably in 2017 we will formally launch this, and so if someone wants to join our fund and invest in our fund, they can do so. If someone says, well, I'm not comfortable with that, I still want to look at every deal and decide yes or no in that deal, that's fine too. Now the kicker on that is that we have a fiduciary and ethical responsibility to bring everything through the fund, right? The last thing someone would want to do is invest in the fund and then we're buying a great deal outside of the fund. I mean,
right.
That'd be hugely immoral and it would violate the documents, the operating agreement of the fund. So we believe that a lot of the opportunities will go through the fund, and that people that are not going to be in the fund will probably miss out on some things, but maybe not. I don't know. Maybe, and probably the fund will invest in every deal or most deals, but won't necessarily be all of the investment. So we might have a $5 million investment, and the fund might invest $2 million, and we might get $3 million from a larger investor outside of the fund. So we're still exploring that, but it gives people another opportunity to participate with us. What we found is that it's very challenging to treat people the way we want to treat them, the way we raise money, because we don't have a deal right now, right? So we don't have a deal today. I can't go to someone and say this is the deal we have, because we don't have a deal. So we can stay in touch and we can, maintain a relationship, but we can't take their money. And then all of a sudden we're going to be looking for deals, and all of a sudden we'll have a deal. Well, once we have a deal, we have an ethical, again, fiduciary responsibility to get that thing closed for our investors. I mean, we can't be Mr. Nice Guy and call up an investor and say, okay, take your time. You got a couple weeks, and if you want to invest, just let me know. I mean, we literally call people. I mean, it seems like it would be easier than this, but it's complicated because we call people or we send an email, and the only way to do it is to either have a electronically set up, which we're doing this, but in as of now, we take down their commitments, right? We time date stamp them. I mean, Joe Smith says he's in for $250,000, and obviously we have to know him and believe that he's good for it. But for now, we mark him down and the time date, and we fill it up that way. And then we follow up. We say, are you really for sure? Here, any questions? And maybe one or two will say, I'm not sure, and we'll replace those by closing or something. But essentially, that's the way we do it. Well, if someone's out of town and they don't get the email, or they don't have, we've already raised the money, they simply can't invest. That's
right.
Just the reality. We have a lot of people who have been wanting to invest, and or maybe you're just a more you just like to take your time, right? You're just a more process-driven person, and you don't like to make a quick decision about an investment, which is fine. We require, the way we do business, we require people to make pretty quick decisions. Well, instead of investing, $500,000 or $300,000, someone could come into the fund and say, well, I'm going to get to know you guys, and I'll invest $100,000 or $200,000 to start with. I'll see how it's going. And, and then a year from now, I can put another couple hundred thousand and do more. And it's just a different way to invest.
Quick question for you, and I don't know why I've never thought of this, but I'm sure it's probably been answered, and maybe I wasn't listening. If somebody has a 1031 exchange to do, is a fund like this an option for them to invest in? Do you know? Say a 1031, say somebody's been in, single family homes or whatever, and wants to sell and get out and be passive. And, the basic fundamental understanding I have of a 1031 is you have to find a property of greater or equal or greater value, or greater value, actually dollar more at least. Would somebody in that position who sells a property and is looking for something to invest in, could they roll into your fund and qualify for the 1031?
Unfortunately, no. And here's why. So the two basic ways that we've taken title to real estate investments are, an LLC partnership and a TIC, a tenant in common. And unfortunately, you talk with a 1031 exchange attorney to verify this, but this is my understanding, and this is how we've done it. The way you hold title when you sell. Okay, so let's say I hold title, Paul Worcester, in my name, and I hold it, or it's in an LLC, but for now, let's just say it's in my name, and I sell that. I've got to move into another piece of real estate with that same title, and I have to be a true owner, right?
Gotcha.
So I can't join a partnership. So, this is happening right now. So we had proceeds from the sale that I mentioned earlier, a few million dollars that people 1031 exchanged, and moving it into another deal of ours. We had to move that into a tenant in common or a fractional owner. It comes out of the condominium, fractional ownership laws that made it so condo. It is my understanding of how condos originated is TICs were born. And so you have to be an actual owner. You can't be a piece. You can't have units in a partnership. You as a TIC, as a tenant in common, you truly own, whatever fraction of that piece of real estate that you bought. You own that. It's yours. No one can tell you to sell. You have all the rights of an owner.
Got it. No, I just,
so we, So we only work with people on who have exchange money of significance. I mean, if someone has $50,000 or $100,000, we're not gonna probably work with them. If they have $500,000, you know, we will make an effort to try and find something for them, and we'll have to create a tenant in common opportunity for them to invest.
Gotcha. Well, now I know. I don't know why that hadn't crossed my brain before, but it has. Hey, we've been going here for about an hour, and I want to be respectful of your time. You mentioned right now you're not nothing right away. You guys are actually, you're doing your development. Can you tell us a little real quick about the development, and then we'll wrap up?
Yeah, we've got three developments, one in the north part of Kansas City that are townhomes, 172 of those that are being delivered right now. We just got our first units, and we're closing here in a week on the first tranche of those. We have a 330-unit development in the east part of Kansas City in Lee's Summit. That is going up right now. That's a combination of townhomes and garden style apartments, and that's going well. We have about 30 units that have been delivered thus far, and we'll have about 100 in the next 90 days or so that'll be delivered. And then the third one is our redevelopment of a vacant commercial office building in downtown. We just bought that a few weeks ago. The real estate of the building fronts our brand new streetcar, which just came online a few months ago in Kansas City. It's a pretty big deal. It's actually modeled after Portland's streetcar. The government visited Portland, I understand, multiple times and studied that and designed it's a starter line, the 2 mile starter line. But it's a pretty big deal, and we feel that it's going to fundamentally change the downtown and the walkability of downtown, and it is already happening that people want to be on the streetcar. And so our building is right on the streetcar, pretty unique real estate. And it's actually our real estate goes up to one of the five places on the streetcar where there's a dual stop. So you can go north or south, right from our, so you can walk out our front door, hop on the streetcar and go south or north and, you know, get to all the restaurants or places you'd want to be. So we're very excited about that. That'll be about a couple hundred apartment units, and then there'll be some commercial as well. We're planning to potentially move our corporate headquarters into that building. But we hope to build that within a couple of years, and it'll be about a $50 million project. And it is a historic redevelopment. So we are applying for and hope to have it by the end of the year to be listed on the National Historic Registry, which gives us a lot of historic tax credits that will make the project viable.
No, that's great. That's exciting. I've heard a lot of good things about that, and just how downtown's getting a pulse. Back when I was growing up, it was kind of one of those things that everybody ran from at 5 o'clock on Friday and didn't come back till Monday at 8 a.m. But that's a great opportunity for you guys, and congrats on that. Paul, you've been extremely generous with your time and provided a lot of great input and examples of what you guys do in Kansas City and syndication. Before I let you go, you want to let the listeners know how to get a hold of you?
Yeah, you can find our information at our website, which is WorcesterInvestments.com. Worcester is like Worcester, Massachusetts, or Worcestershire sauce, same spelling. So that's probably the easiest way. Or you just, if you're in Kansas City, you should be able to find us and love to meet up with someone if they're in the market.
All right. Well, Paul, thanks again for taking the time. Please say hi to your brother, and we'll be in touch soon.
Okay, Darren, thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed that. Paul and his family have created a great business from scratch, and they've grown
from just a duplex to over 3,000 units, and now they're also in the development. And I think the cool thing for me to remember, and I hope you hear as well, is that this is something that anyone can do. It takes a lot of work, but you can do it. And I hope you enjoyed that. I want to remind you, too, if you haven't already, please, we'd love to have you subscribe to the show. And if you have any questions about your insurance or any other real estate matters, please reach out to me. I'd love to help you if I can. We know you're busy. We thank you for making time for us today. We do appreciate you. Until next time, thanks for listening to Commercial Real Estate Pro Network's CREPN Radio.
You're listening to CREPN Radio for influential commercial real estate professionals. For more information on this or any of our guests, like us on Facebook, CREPN Radio.